Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. It's Tuesday, and we got Tim Staples with us for another hour, so that's pretty good, huh? 888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. I have to say that I think the show's just going great so far. I just want to do a mid-course evaluation, and I'm going to give you all stars. I only have one regret of my own, but I'll just move past it.
Well, I give you 6 stars out of a possible 5.
Wow! Wow! Your refrigerator must look crazy with the if that's what you're doing for me. I can't imagine what you do for your kids.
There you go.
We're going to Southeast Asia. I'm not exactly sure where in Southeast Asia, but Pravis, watching on YouTube. We're just delighted to have you, Pravis. Go ahead with your question for Tim.
Hello, Mr. Keller, and it's pleasant if you recall the Malaysian regular.
Okay, yeah, so you're calling from Malaysia.
Yes. I have Pravis. Is it Pravis or Pravis?
No, it's Pravis, but there's an N at the end.
Okay. Pravin. So, yeah, we had a little spelling.
Spelling error here, but I have actually been to Malaysia. I absolutely loved it. I wish I could remember where I went. It's been years ago, but I was really surprised to see such an on-fire Catholic church in Malaysia, but it really seems to be. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, we have a tradition of going way back. For example, St. Francis Xavier has, you know, came here and started his missionary, and
right.
We have a chapel dedicated to his honor. So, yeah, we have a long history here. And,
beautiful. Yeah, well, what's on your mind? How can I help you, brother?
All right, Mr. Staples. So, my question is, I would regard it to be simple, but it's somewhat controversial, and it has to do with many of the concerns that my other Catholic friends have, and that, namely, is the apparent rise of what we perceive to be religious indifferentism in right. the Catholic Church. And so the concern is that, I mean, we're not accusing the popes of anything, you know, in particular, but we do notice these, you know, these oddities of seemingly being overly charitable, if that's for lack of a better phrase, and being overly tolerant, and there's no seeming emphasis on the exclusive and universal truth of Catholicism. And so what happens is many people who convert, they say, okay, well, what was the point of converting if all these religions have the truth and then they all lead to Christ? So my right. simple question is, how do we overcome this solution with other people on this problem? What's your take on it? And how do we overcome that? And how do we adjust the concerns of other people?
It's a great question, Pravin. And I believe evangelism and catechesis, my friend, this is the key. That you and I have to get a hold of this one holy Catholic and apostolic faith of ours and understand that indifferentism, of course, is a grave sin when we were, or if we were to teach that there's no difference between religions, you know, they're, what did Muhammad Ali say, right? They're like different bodies of water, different rivers, or different streams that all lead to the same ocean, right?
Oh, I never heard Ali say that.
Oh, yeah. He did. He got mellow in his later years.
Uh-huh.
Right? That kind of indifferentism that says there's no real difference, everybody has the truth, and that sort of thing, which is, of course, logically absurd. You can't say the Muslims who deny Jesus is God denies the Son of God, and we who believe he's God and he's the Son of God have the truth, because
right.
both can't be right, all right? So the bottom line is what we need to do, brother. This is the call of our time and, of course, of every time, but especially our time. We need to form our consciences in accordance with the truth of the Catholic faith. And when we see these myths being portrayed out there that Pope Francis is an indifferentist or John Paul was an indifferentist, we hear it over and over, and sometimes from people in our own church. Unfortunately, Pope Saint, I emphasize, John Paul the uh-huh. Great was not an indifferentist, as he was accused, because he kissed the Quran and the prayer gathering of Assisi. And now we have the same thing going on with Pope Francis. But if you actually read the magisterial teachings of Pope St. John Paul the Great, Benedict XVI, Pope Francis, you know what you discover? They're all Catholic, and they are all proclaiming the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic faith, and that's what we have to do. The answer to all of the confusion is clarity. The answer to all of the lies are or is the truth, my friend? And that's what we're about here at Catholic Answers. We present what the Catholic Church teaches, and that's what we have to do as Catholic Christians, you know, steer clear of all the controversies out there. And I urge my Catholic friends, don't just accept everything you hear on the media, whether it's secular media or some quote-unquote Catholic media that are controversialists and are always calling into question the bishops are evil, the Pope is a false prophet, the Pope is, you know, you see all this language out there. It's nonsense. It's garbage. It's not helping anybody. Let's get back to the magisterial teachings of the church. If we continue in his word, Jesus says, we will be disciples indeed, and we will know the truth, and the truth will make us free. It is truth that changes lives. It's the gospel that is the power of God unto salvation, according to Romans 1:16. And that's what we've got to preach, speak, every chance we get as Catholics. Because we've got to be convinced. We've got to know that ultimately that is the answer for what ails every human being walking around outside this studio in San Diego or in Malaysia or anywhere else. It is the gospel of Jesus Christ, the fullness of which we alone possess as Catholics.
Pravin, how's that for you?
That was a fantastic answer. Thank you so much for your charity.
All right, brother.
Well, thank you for the call. It's very exciting to us. So whenever we get a, we don't get a lot of calls from Malaysia. I don't know if you know this, Pravin, but it's great to get one every now and then, and I hope we'll get to talk again, okay?
And folks in Malaysia, I want to come back because I love that country. Okay. I really do. It's just wonderful. I can remember getting off the plane, Pravin, and thinking, who in the world's going to know who I am in Malaysia?
Yeah, right.
And then I go into a packed church. In fact, every church I spoke at was packed. People were on fire, and they knew Catholic Answers. They knew. It's just, wow, fantastic.
Pravin, thank you very, very much for the call. It's open forum. Our number is 888-318-7884. I have to say, I get that feeling a lot. Like, when I go to a place, I'm like, who in the heck is going to know who I am? Yes. And often the answer is actually nobody. So
I say that when I walk in the doors of Catholic Answers every day. Who in the world
we
in here?
We know you, Tim Staples. We know you. That's why we're all hiding. Owen in San Francisco, California, watching on YouTube. You are up next. Hi, Owen. No?
Owen.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, we can hear you. Yes. Did you have the mute button on, Owen?
Sorry. I did. I'm so sorry.
Well, you're in San Francisco. That's supposed to be like tech-savvy capital of the world. What's up?
I know, and I have a degree in computer networking.
All right, well, okay, good. I hope you're running Facebook. Go ahead, Owen, with your question.
Yeah, it's a pleasure talking with you guys. I was wondering if, Tim, you have any advice on scrupulosity, and especially for someone who, you know, might recognize something in sin, but especially in those gray areas, might always be questioning whether or not he should go up for communion and whether or not if he's in a state of mortal sin or not.
Yeah. Owen, it's a great question, an important question. I always advise folks that someone who suffers from scrupulosity really needs a spiritual director. You need a good and knowledgeable priest because this thing can be paralyzing. You know, it's one thing for me on a radio station to say, well, look, man, you just got to read this is the teaching of the church and you live by it, pal, right? But of course, the bottom line is when you're suffering from scrupulosity, there are forces involved. It's kind of like if someone falls into a habitual sin, right? And you go to confession and you fall again, and you go to confession and you fall again. You need spiritual direction. You need help. You need to surround yourself with Catholic people of like mind and so forth, and you got to work through. I love the readings this past Sunday, you know, from Mark chapter 4. You know, the storm is raging, Owen, right? Don't you love that? Mark 4, I think it was 35 through 39 was the gospel reading this Sunday. And the apostle's like, we're going to die. And Jesus is asleep. He's asleep on a cushion there. And, you know, are you not concerned that we're perishing? And, of course, Jesus stands up and says, peace be still. That the scrupulous person is in the midst of a storm, and it's bigger than that person. And this is true for our lives in general. You know, we're in storms all the time, and it's more powerful. We can't deal with it. We need supernatural power, the supernatural power that only comes from Jesus Christ. He alone can say, peace be still to those storms. But see, if you're so enveloped in the storm, you can't look to Jesus. And so there are times when you need somebody to help you to turn your face toward Jesus because you get enveloped in the scrupulosity or whatever. It could be habitual sin, right? So that's why I always say you need spiritual direction, because for a scrupulous person, you know, it's kind of like I could use another analogy, the alcoholic. The alcoholic who has a problem chemically with alcohol, see, Cy or I can have a beer and it's not a problem, but a person who's an alcoholic, one beer is an occasion of sin, and they go spiraling out of control. So for the scrupulous person, you know, as I remember talking to a priest years ago about this who has directed scrupulous people, he will tell the scrupulous person, you know, knock it off. By the way, Martin Luther most likely suffered from a very bad case of scrupulosity, because he would go to confession and confess his sins, and he would leave the confessional and he would dive right back in because he had one thought. And you know what? There are times when a spiritual director has to do what allegedly that confessor did to Martin Luther. Get out of here. Stop confessing. You're forgiven. Go.
Right. Yes.
Right? Now, I can't do that talking with a scrupulous person from afar. Just tell them, stop confessing that and go. That really has to be done by somebody who knows the person, is involved with the person, and understands their level of scrupulosity, because you really do have to deal with it in a different way than you would deal with the average person, because the person who wants to keep confessing the same sin over and over again, it gets to the point where if a priest keeps allowing him to do that, he's enabling him in the scrupulosity. There needs to be that person in the scrupulous person's life that can say what that priest said to Luther, but we really can't do that over the radio. Does that make sense, Owen?
Oh, hang on, Owen. Go ahead. Does that make sense?
Hello? Yeah, it does. Thank you so much, Tim. And do you mind if I ask a quick follow-up question?
Sure. Fire away.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd be comfortable answering this, but would you recommend that I go up for communion if I'm not entirely sure I'm in a state of mortal sin, knowing that I'm scrupulous?
Yeah, Owen, and again, that's something I would not do from afar, but I would say in principle that is certainly possible. Because now, this kind of flies in the face of the norm. What does Paul say in, what is it, in Romans chapter 14? You probably know it, Owen. Whatever is not of faith is sin, right? And so classically, the church recommends you do not act on a doubting conscience, right? It's kind of like the guy that's out hunting, yeah. Right? And you come upon some, hey, that bush is moving over there. Could be a deer. Could be my buddy, but I'm just going to shoot and find out later. No, you don't do that, right? You don't act on a doubting conscience. You know, you could kill your buddy over there. That's the theological, the moral theological norm. However, and that's why, brother, we don't like giving advice from afar in these cases, is because with the scrupulous person, it could be just the opposite, that he needs to act on his doubt because there's deeper problems going on here. But again, Owen, I would never say in a particular situation for you to do that. I really, really, really encourage you to talk with a spiritual director. But that is certainly a possibility.
Thanks, Owen. We got to take a break, so we'll be right back with more Open Forum with Tim Staples right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Others that I would say definitely made an impact now is EWTN, and I go and walk at the park every day at lunch listening to you guys and being able to learn a lot more about the faith, learn a lot of other perspectives that I may have not have thought about. So I just want to thank y'all for being a big influence.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Killett, your host, and we have a free ebook for you, and it's a new one if you've been keeping up with the free ebooks, or if you get the free ebooks. So they, usually every month or two, a new one comes along, and the Beginner's Guide to Biblical Prophecy is available right now. It's free. You just go to shop.catholic.com, and you click the free ebook button, and you can get the Beginner's Guide to Biblical Prophecy right now. It's open forum. Tim Staples is our guest this hour, and you're welcome to call 888-318-7884 if you have a question. We go now all the way down to Dallas, Texas, listening on 910 a.m. Lucia, are you there with us? Either Lucia is a fax machine or we're having a phone problem. Hang on. We're going to come back to you, Lucia. I hope she's not a fax machine because that does not speak well for our future. Fax machines are calling with questions. Let's go to Michigan. Mary in Michigan listening on Ave Maria Radio. Are you there with us, Mary?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, wow. That's very clear. All right. Go ahead with your question for Tim.
So I have an 18-year-old son. He is the 11th of my 14 children. And he came to me and said, I don't think I can be Catholic because I don't believe in everything the church demands me to believe in to be Catholic.
Yes.
Now, I would like to preface this that my children are all academic on quiz bowl, Catholic quiz bowls. They can cite things that I'm always surprised that they know. So in my feeble attempts to understand this, I said, well, I tried to expound from him what exactly he was having a problem with. Now, he's read Summa Theologica mm-hmm. by Thomas Aquinas. Mm-hmm. So he's reason isn't the problem here, I believe. So my question is, the word I believe, like I know in my head that I need oxygen to breathe and live, but I can't see oxygen and I couldn't tell you how oxygen gets in and keeps me alive. But when we say I believe, that doesn't mean I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean I trust what I don't understand? I'm trying to not make this really, you know, right. worse for him.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to understand at 18 what the word I believe mm-hmm. means to him.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's, I think what you have to do, Mary, you remind me of a fellow who came to me about 21 years ago. And it was at a conference where I was speaking, and he came up with his mother, much like your son, and he was a young fella, and he had a list of 21 reasons why he would never be Catholic. He had left his Catholic faith. His mother brought him to a conference of mine. And here it is. He pulls it out, 21 reasons why I will never be Catholic. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, brother, let me finish. I was signing stuff and selling stuff at my table after the talk, and I said, let me finish with this, and let's start on that 21 reasons why you're not Catholic. And so sure enough, he hung out with his mom, and I got started answering those questions. And you know what? Today, that young man is a Catholic priest.
Oh, man.
And he said, you know, that night, we were able to get through enough of those, and we ended up being there till very, very late. But here's my point. What we have, Mary, is the fullness of the truth that God has deigned for man to know as necessary for his salvation. We have it. We don't have answers to everything, but what God has willed for us to have answers to, we have it, and it's airtight. There's not a single thing that we teach that's contrary to reason. There's nothing about it that's irrational. In fact, as Pope, or not Pope, but St. Thomas Aquinas famously says in Book 1 of not the Summa Theologiae, but the Summa Contra Gentiles, in Book 1, Chapters 7 through 9, he says this, and I have always taken this. This is kind of my foundation as an apologist, this principle Thomas lays out. Whatever error anybody presents about the Catholic faith can be traced back to an error in reason. Okay, we're not rationalists. You can't you can't reason your way to the Trinity. However, there's nothing about the Trinity that's irrational or in error. Now, Mary, what Thomas Aquinas recommends, especially when you're evangelizing unbelievers, he says, don't try to present the mystery. Let them present what they believe the mystery is, and when they present errors, you can correct them. And I think that is just profound advice. So that's the approach I take, Mary. Another way of looking at this, it's the Columbo approach, right? Just, ask a question here or there, but really I would love to be able to let your 18-year-old son just unspool. Tell me why you will never be Catholic. Tell me why you don't believe whatever it is that you don't believe. And I would let them unspool, and then you find where the errors are and you begin to share, right? Now, Mary, if it is, and I don't know because I don't know your son, if it is the case that we begin, let's say we talk about the Trinity, and he ends up saying, you know what? I agree. There's nothing irrational about the Trinity. It was revealed by Jesus Christ that there's a Trinity. I just don't believe it. I don't believe the Trinity, and I don't believe Jesus Christ. Well, then you got more work cut out for you. And sometimes you can get to the place where you simply, all you can do is pray. Because there are cases there, I find them to be very rare, when a person will come to agree with almost everything, but there's another problem. There's a deeper problem. And Mary, I find sometimes it's a moral problem, and it's something that the person doesn't bring up right away, but there's another problem. It has nothing to do with intellect. It has nothing to do with any of the tenets of our faith, but there can be a moral problem in a person's life that keeps them from being able to make the commitment. There's all sorts of problems that are possible, Mary. The most important thing is you love your son right where he is. Pray to God. I think in a case like your son's, a third party would be really helpful. If he knows us here at Catholic Answers, Mary, please tell him to give us a call. I would love to talk with him. I'd talk with him in private if he wants. And I'll talk to him as long as he wants to, but it really might be helpful to have a third party come in, because a lot of times moms and dads aren't the best ones to evangelize the children. It's that old axiom, of Jesus, a prophet is welcome everywhere except in his own hometown, right? So, that's the best I can do, Mary, because I don't know your son and I don't know the particulars, but maybe that's a way of helping you to uncover what they are. And I certainly offer our services here at Catholic Answers to help in any way we can.
Thanks, Mary. I hope that was helpful for you. All lines full, so I'm going to keep moving. I'm going back to Dallas, Texas, 9:10 a.m. Lucia, are you there with us? Still having trouble with that connection. Okay, well, we're going to come back to you. As long as you're still there, I'll just keep coming back and we'll see if that connection clicks. Let's go to San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Joe, go ahead with your question for Tim. No, Joe?
Yeah.
Well, Texas ain't working. All right, I'm going to have to go. I got to look on the list of callers here now and go somewhere other than Texas because, all right, so I bet Oregon. Teresa in Salem, Oregon, listening on 88.3 FM. Is Oregon working? Teresa, are you there with us?
Yes, I'm here. I can hear you.
Oregon's working. Excellent. All right, go ahead with your question for Tim.
Thank you for taking my call. I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
But at the top of the hour, you were all inviting everybody to come to Mass now that, you know, the churches are opening up. And you mentioned that those that don't come back maybe really weren't Catholic in the first place. And I just want to say that I'm a cradle Catholic, and I love being Catholic. And for the past 10 years, I've been very involved in my church with lectoring and giving communion and taking communion to people that can't get to church. I helped in RCIA, but just a lot of stuff. I love my church. It was my home away from home. And then COVID happened, and during Lent, they shut the doors. And I called my priest and begged him not to do that. I told him myself it was Satan's work, you know, that you should never close.
Teresa, we're getting your point, but we got to take a break, so we'll continue on the other side.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. It's free, and you'll have instant access to our daily broadcast, the schedule of upcoming shows, and you'll even be able to search the archive and listen to thousands of past shows. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Most of us Catholic parents agree our number one goal in life is to pass on the faith to our children. But here's the bad news. Today's world has a million ways to steal your kid's soul. Don't be afraid, says Father Sebastian Walsh. God loves your children even more than you do, and he desires their salvation more than anything. In his groundbreaking new book, Always a Catholic, Father Walsh shows you how to cooperate with God to bring about the fulfillment of his will for your kids. Always a Catholic reminds us that keeping our kids in the faith is about the way we live our Catholicism in our own lives and as a family from day to day. Order your copy of Always a Catholic by visiting shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Before we went to the break, we had to kind of strand Teresa in the midst of her comments, and I apologize, Teresa, for that. But you were saying that Tim had said at the beginning of this hour that, you know, that you'd have to question the depth of the Catholic faith of some who are not coming back to Mass after the COVID. And you, Teresa, were saying you were sharing your own experience as a very involved Catholic before the COVID happened. And then last year, the priests shut the church during Lent, and you felt this was the work of the devil, and then we had to cut you off. So you want to continue, Teresa?
Right. Yes, I guess to get to the point, I just have really lost, not lost, but the trust in my shepherds has been broken, and I don't know how to get that back. And how do I get that joy back? By going to Mass, because I used to love it, and now a lot of times I choose just to watch it on TV because I don't want to go to Mass because that trust has been broken. And I just, what are your recommendations for those of us that really are Catholic and want to continue to be, but are really heartbroken over what happened?
Yeah, you know what? First and foremost, the fact that you feel heartbroken is not wrong. It's not good or evil. It simply is. You know, that is the reality that you're dealing with. And I completely understand why you would feel that way. That why would they close the doors? The sacraments, the most important thing in the universe, is our Lord's present body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist. So please understand first that it is totally understandable why you would feel the way you feel. In a certain sense, there's nothing you can do about what you feel in a situation. That is a reaction that comes from your core. But once we feel that way, this is what I would recommend to you. The question becomes, what am I going to do with this feeling? Right? It's like any passion in the moral life. We have all sorts of passions, right? Rooted in our human nature. And these passions flare up in different situations, and that's not bad. In fact, that's normal that passions flare up. But the question always is, what are we going to do with those passions? And that's where the faith comes in. And I would encourage you to consider the perennial faith of the church, because Jesus Christ founded the church, gave the church infallible authority to be a trustworthy teacher that teaches us the truth. And so, beyond any judgments made by bishops, the Pope, or anybody else on whether we're going to open a church or not during a COVID pandemic, we have the infallible teachings of the church that we know, we can trust, and we can place our souls in the care of. And the church teaches us, right? As you know, precepts of the church. One of them is we must go to Mass on all Sundays and holy days of obligation. This is essential for our salvation. This is given to us by Jesus Christ through the teaching authority of the church and in an infallible way. And so then what we can conclude is, look, if my feelings are leading me to contradict this, well, I'm not going to the church because I'm hurt.
Yeah.
That is wrongheaded. We're going in the wrong direction, because what we need when we're hurt is not to go away from Jesus in his church, but we need to run to Jesus in his church, because ultimately healing is found in the church and in the sacraments that he has given to us. So that's what I would recommend. It's that kind of process that we all have to do when we are hurt. There's a time to be hurt, right? There's a time, as Ecclesiastes says, there's a time to kill and a time to heal. There's a time when we simply need to be healed because we are hurt, right? And we are legitimately hurt. But then we've got to say, where do I go for the healing? And that's where Jesus and his church comes in. So do not allow everything that has happened to keep you from your healing. And that comes through Jesus Christ in the sacraments. All right. And one quick last thing. One thing I have struggled with, during the pandemic, especially early on, is I also tried to get into the shoes of the Pope and the bishops. Because it's easy for me to say, why did you close the church? These are the sacraments. This is what we need for salvation, right? But from their perspective, what if they just kept the churches open and then the elderly start dying from COVID and it gets traced back to going to Mass? You know, what happens then? See, the bishops and the Pope have they're not just looking at Tim Staples' life or Cy Kellett. They're looking out for the common good, and they have to make decisions sometimes that are not popular. And in this case, it's not an infallible thing. It's not like the Pope spoke infallibly on this. He couldn't. This is a disciplinary matter, and it's a matter of prudence. And so we have to trust God. He is the one that would establish the church hierarchically, and he's going to take care of things. Right? I empathize with the bishops, and then I move on. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you so much for the call. I feel quite certain that that you've helped many people with your expression of your feelings, because I think it's just been a tough, tough year, and there's a lot of residue left from it. So I really am grateful for your call, Teresa. Let's go to Oregon now. Leanne in Oregon watching on YouTube. Hi, Leanne. Got a question for Tim?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call, too. My question is, at least here in Oregon, it's about a three-year wait for a marriage annulment. Once you've done all the paperwork, I just have been remarried. My husband and I were both Catholics. My first marriage was not in the church, so mine shouldn't take that long. His previous marriage was in the church, and our advocate that works with our church said 3-year wait. So, you know, we go to Mass, we can't take Eucharist. We can't do some of the things that we would like to do to be involved.
Right.
You know, she's like, you're part of the family. And I'm like, well, I'm that redheaded stepchild that goes to family reunions, but I can't really participate in the Eucharist, which is, you know, so important.
Sure.
So my question is, instead of complaining, my question is, are there steps being taken to shorten the wait times of...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And things like that.
Yeah, and I tell you, I have never heard of this 3-year wait.
That's really, I think,
outrageous. But yes, there are and have been steps taken. In fact, one was Pope Francis who reversed. Remember Pope St. John Paul, because of the increases, and dramatically so, especially in the United States, in the numbers of annulments, he, by motu proprio, made it necessary for there to be two separate tribunals. And for a time, it caused even greater backups in the system. Pope Francis changed that, and I think that was really wise. You know, it's not putting John Paul down. He's a saint. But, you know, these are prudential judgments, right, Cy? These situations in the church because she is at the same time both divine and very human, right? And so, yeah, there have been things put in place to streamline the process. Of course, the process is so important that there are certain aspects of it that, you know, the tribunals just can't overlook.
Right.
Certain stones do have to be turned over. And so it's a difficult situation. And, you know, we can't really speak to this from tribunal to tribunal. It's something that's beyond our area of expertise as apologists here to be able to deal with each situation like that. So I do think, though, Cy, a 3-year wait for an advocate to say that just off the top seems excessive.
I mean, the Pope simplified the forms and the process and got rid of some automatic appeals that people had to go through.
It's, right.
And, you know, I still imagine it takes more than a year in most cases probably. But 3 years seems – that almost doesn't seem
– Yeah.
That's really shocking to me.
Leanne, have you talked to your bishop about it?
No, I haven't. We just talked to the advocate, and she said that is what it has been taking even before COVID. And then with COVID, you know, they had to meet in person, so they weren't allowed to meet in person. So that would even make it longer.
Right.
So we were looking actually at 3 to 4 years. But pre-COVID, it had been taking 3 years.
Right. Yeah, I've never heard that as a rule. But my suggestion would be to make an appointment to see your bishop and talk to him about it.
Right, exactly. That makes sense to you, Leanne?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yes,
thanks for your call. I'm going to look into this, though, because
I'm sorry to hear
that. Thank you.
Yes.
I mean, it might be that the priest shortage is particularly acute there, or they have some other backlog reason, but I have not heard 3 years. That's a long time to get an answer. I mean, all you're asking for is an answer.
Right.
You know, you don't have control over what the answer is, but hey, right now, it's on sale, the book everybody is talking about, A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. By everybody, I mean me. I'm the one who's been talking about it because I wrote it and I want you to have it. And so the idea of the book is a book you can put in the hands of someone who does not know Jesus or has not had that introduction to Jesus, and they can get to know him. A Teacher of Strange Things, 25% off right now at shop.catholic.com. Put in the promo code TEACHME when you check out, and you get 25% off. A Teacher of Strange Things at shop.catholic.com.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Don't you feel sometimes like there's so many people in the world, how does he hear your prayer? Never think of that, huh? Everybody thinks that. I'm only a little grain of sand on the seashore. Oh, but that's not true. See, God is God. And you and I have to let God be God. I don't know how he does it. He's God.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Tim Staples, our guest, working our way through calls from all over the country, all over the world, and happy to do it, whether you're Catholic or not. You're welcome on Open Forum Days to ask any question you want about the Catholic faith. And we're going right here in California this time. James in California, watching on YouTube Live. You're up next, James. Go ahead with your question for Tim.
All right. So I have kind of, it's not a huge issue, but St. Padre Pio, he had the stigmata in his upper palm, I think it was, but on the Shroud of Turin, and I think St. Francis of Assisi, the wound was in the wrist.
Not on St. Francis. It was palms, I believe. But yeah, we're running out of time, so I want to get to as many calls as I can. It's a great question, and I think the problem was, there was the famous book, was it Pierre Barbe? I think you pronounce B-A-R-B-E-T.
Was this really a famous book? Because I have...
Yes.
I haven't heard of any famous books by Pierre Barbe.
Well, it was The Physician at
How are we
Calvary.
Using the word? Oh, that yes. was a famous book. Yes. Yes. Sorry, Tim. Yes. I'd be a smart aleck.
A Physician at Calvary. And, he claimed that it would be impossible for a body to be held up by a nail through the hands, and it was actually the wrists and all of that. Well, that has since been demonstrated. In fact, I talked to a medical doctor who said that has been demonstrated to be false. They've done it with cadavers, actually. Actually the body can be held up by the palms. But further, it appears on the shroud that there was actually ties around the forearms to keep the body from
Security.
Having that problem,
yeah.
to secure them on the cross. And so there's a real question here, and it appears that Christ would have been crucified the nails through the hands and not the wrists. But this is something that, of course, the church isn't going to give us some definitive answer on. This is something you and I can disagree about. But when you look at the Shroud of Turin, it may well be that because, Jesus' arms are folded. So what you're seeing on the shroud is the back of Jesus' hands, right? Because they're folded across his body. You can't see the palms. And so what it appears is we're probably looking at exit wounds that are on the back of the wrist. But that doesn't mean that that's where they entered. And so there are those who argue that it actually was simply at an angle. It went in the palm and kind of out the upper part of his hand, or kind of close to the wrist. And the blood, of course, is going to be splattering and such. And so it's not easy to see exactly where the nail even exited on the shroud. So I say all that to say this. This is an interesting topic. It seems to me there is a strong argument to be made that he was in fact nailed in the palms and not on the wrists, because the main reason for the change in the tradition that it was always hands and feet has really been proven to be bogus. Most likely, that's my opinion, he was actually nailed through the palms, and the stigmatists down through the centuries have seemed to verify that. You know, why would our Blessed Lord give them the stigmata in the palms if actually he wasn't, the nails didn't go through the palms? So that's kind of my opinion. There's a lot of research that needs to be done on this. And again, it's an interesting question.
James, we'll leave it there because, as we said, there's lots of folks on the line, and we are short of time now, just a little bit left in the program. Want to get to as many as we can. And so we go now to England, in the United Kingdom, watching on YouTube. Thomas, we're very happy to have you again. Thomas, go ahead with your question for Tim Staples.
Yeah, thank you very much. I love being on the program. So this is a bit of a personal question for me. I can attest to something, and I'm sure many other young people would attest to that as well. There is a great growth in the traditionalist Catholic movement. Mm-hmm. I think young people are attracted to the centuries of beautiful tradition that the church has left us, especially in its worship. Mm-hmm. And so recently I have heard very worrying rumors that Pope Francis may be preparing a document, or has given some support to a draft of a document that will severely restrict the celebration of traditional rites in the Latin Mass. Mm-hmm. So I know these are just rumors, and you know, many rumors end up being falsehoods. However, my question is twofold. Do you think I'm justified in feeling that there is some animosity towards traditional Catholics, both from other Catholics in the mainstream, mm-hmm. if I may use that word, Catholics, right. and the Catholic establishment? And the second question is, what specific protections does Summorum Pontificum from His Holiness mm-hmm. Pope Benedict, who's granted us these protections, what concrete protections do we have to celebrate these ancient rites? Thank you very much.
Right, and thanks for the question. And I think you made the most important point when you said rumors. Yes, he allegedly mentioned this to the Italian bishops. I personally do not believe it's going to happen. The idea of him abrogating Summorum Pontificum, I just don't buy it. Especially when Pope Francis has extended the olive branch, even to the Society of St. Pius X, beyond anything that his predecessors have done, even giving them faculties. That's an extraordinary move to hear confessions and, in a somewhat limited way, to witness marriages validly. That is extraordinary. So it just doesn't make sense to me, number one. Number two, the things that I'm reading about, even if the Holy Father was to abrogate that document, which of course he has the juridical authority to do, this would not eliminate the Latin Mass or I think it would be a mistake
for him to do it.
I really do, because mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think there is a really healthy movement among traditionalists, and Pope John Paul and Benedict and Pope Francis have been extremely helpful in encouraging it. Now, are there problems? Certainly there are. I mean, you have some who would, you know, we'd put traditionalists in quotes, you know, when you talk about Archbishop Vigano or Schneider. I mean, these are extremists that are saying crazy things. But that's not all traditionalists, and that's not the core of what traditionalism is about. You know, a guy calling the Pope a false prophet is not a good thing. You know, Archbishop Vigano, of course that's silly and irresponsible and all the rest. But to think Pope Francis now has it out for traditionalists because of these extremists and whatnot, I just think is just false. And I think, you know, it's kind of, this reminds me, Cy, I could be totally wrong here. It reminds me of the Pope's going to try to, you know, justify homosexual marriage or homosexuality or women's ordination or you name it. And one by one, the Holy Father has come out. Church can't bless sin. Any questions?
Yeah, right.
Automatic excommunication for any woman who attempts to be ordained or a bishop attempts to ordain her. So I would pray, of course, and wait. Do not run around, you know, and I think this is what happens, folks. They run with this stuff even though there's no evidence and start concluding things as well. This is a major mistake. Start concluding things from a document that doesn't exist, okay? You know, you have to at least wait until the document comes out where you can read and see what, in fact, is happening here. I think one thing is clear. Pope Francis is concerned about, as all the popes have been post-Vatican II, with the protection of the council itself, the trajectory from the council, which, of course, is guided by the Holy Spirit. You know, as Pope Francis has said, Vatican II and the reforms of the council are, quote-unquote, irreversible, right? I know he got hammered for that, but he is simply saying now, he's saying infallible. No, he didn't say infallible. He said irreversible. And why? Because he believes, as John Paul did, as Benedict XVI did, and as Paul VI did, that it's the Holy Spirit that convened and that directed the church, I should say, to convene Vatican Council II. It is a prophetic council. The documents are beautiful. There's so much good in those documents that Pope St. John Paul the Great could say, Vatican Council II is the greatest gift the Holy Spirit has given the church in the 20th century, right? And these are things that are really beyond dispute. Popes aren't defending anything. They're simply moving forward with this understanding that it's the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit continues to lead us. And so, of course, the reforms are good, and they're moving forward, and things are, you know, where the reforms are really taking place, exciting things have happened, you know? So those who would say that, oh, the church is going to drop, who was it who said the church needs to, quote-unquote, drop, I think it was Archbishop Vigano, the church needs to, quote-unquote, drop Vatican II. Now, that's absurd.
Come on.
That's impossible, number one, because the church teaches that the promulgation of an ecumenical council is an infallible act of the church. That's an infallible act, according to the doctrinal commentary on the Professio Fide from 1998. Cardinal Ratzinger was the prefect. Pope John Paul ratified that document. So, of course, the church can't, quote, drop Vatican II. But when you have folks that are that extreme that can say things like that, it doesn't help the situation, all right? So I think everybody, I think I said this before, take a chill pill.
Yeah.
And I recommend to folks to actually read the documents of Vatican II, read what Pope Francis is writing as well. And I think, I can tell you, I personally have concluded, I don't think Summorum Pontificum is going anywhere. Pope Francis is not going to abrogate it. I think that's a myth. If he does, I still say take a chill pill, read what he actually says, and you will be surprised. Because that's what I find. When I read, you know, people said all kinds of things about Pope St. John Paul the Great in the prayer meeting of Assisi
sure.
in 86, and then the next one I think was in 90. You know, and all, but then I read the documents, and I read what Pope St. John Paul said, and the same thing with Pope Francis. I actually read what Pope Francis says, and things are very different than what they are often portrayed as being. So, folks, I got good news for you. Jesus is in charge of his church, and everything is going to be all right.
Thomas, thank you. I do have to say I am sympathetic to Thomas. I'm surprised myself at the effect that this motu proprio has had, that I didn't realize that the Latin Mass was going to flower in the way it has in the wake of it. I thought, well, you know, it's good. It's not bad to have
that
it.
That is a good thing. Yes.
Yeah.
That's why I think it would be unwise to try to, you know, Why would you want to stop that?
Well, and for most of his papacy, he has shown no inclination to at all.
Exactly. He's done just the opposite, as I said.
Right. And like even his generosity towards the Society of St. Pius X suggests he's just not looking for fights with traditionalists. Maybe traditionalists should stop looking for fights with him.
Yes, we need loyalty to the magisterium of the Pope.
You're Tim Staples. You would say that.
All right, brother.
Thanks very much for 2 hours, Tim.
Too much fun, brother.
We'll see you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.